Hi, Pod fans. Football Weekly is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted to League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is The Guardian.
Hi, Pod fans. Max here from Hackney Museum, where young Ian is playing with the wooden flowers and flower pots. This is the latest episode of The Guardian Women's Football Weekly. You are a woman, love.
Yeah.
Are you looking forward to the semi-final?
I am.
Who's playing?
Australia.
And?
England.
Correct. This is a pod all about those two quarterfinals, including that amazing penalty shootout between Australia and France, and England beating Colombia just. I hope you enjoy it. Here's Faye.
I'm Faye Carruthers and welcome to The Guardian Women's Football Weekly. Breathe slowly. We have our semi-finalists. England come from behind to knock out Colombia. It was scrappy, but it was a resilient professional performance from the Lionesses. And they'll face co-hosts Australia, who needed a sudden death penalty shootout to progress to the last four of the World Cup for the first time in their history, which means it's au revoir France. Spain needed extra time to beat the Netherlands. They'll face Sweden, who beat one of the most exciting teams in the tournament, 2011 World Champions Japan. So that means there'll be a new nation etched on the trophy. Who will it be? We'll discuss all that, take your questions, and that's today's Guardian Women's Football Weekly. Women's Football Weekly is supported by Google Pixel, the only phone engineered by Google and proud partner of the England teams. Search Google Store to find out more. Oh, panel, you must be exhausted. I feel exhausted. Susie Rack, are you exhausted?
I am barely alive, but here.
Barely alive means alive. And I need to tell you, by the way, I know you've seen it already on social media, but after the last pod where I embarrassed myself by not understanding any of the Salvador Dali related puns, which we now don't need because France are out, I took myself off to the British Museum to try and get cultural. I maybe jinxed Japan, though, because I loved their exhibition and that's where I spent most of my time. And now they're out.
Oh, so all your references are gone?
Totally gone.
How sad. You were going to have such a great final.
I know, I was. To be fair, I didn't write any of them down, so I've forgotten them already. Utterly useless. Marva, please bring some culture to the pod.
I'll do my best. I got back from holiday at 3 a.m. today, so I think even just being able to talk in sentences might be a stretch for me, but I'll try with some highbrow cultural references throughout the pod.
But you're in good company. Don't worry about it. Oh, my goodness me. Joe Kahn, after this pod, we're not speaking, by the way. I mean, what drama you've had to go through today.
Yeah, that's probably fair enough. It has been a huge day in Australia. I can probably offer some cultural observations from here, but that's about it, I think.
Okay, well, listen, we're going to get into your game against France very shortly. But first, let's tackle England 2, Colombia 1. I mean, Susie Rack, you were at Stadium Australia. It very much felt as if it was, you know, a mostly Colombian-based support in the stadium. The Lionesses did it eventually, coming from behind, showing their resilience. What did you make of the game?
I mean, support was incredible, but we sort of knew that was going to be the case because the Colombian fans have just been incredible throughout the entire tournament. I mean, I saw an interview somewhere where one was saying that they had taken out a 48-month loan to be able to fly out here and things like that. So it was always going to be good. And it was absolutely electric, like spine tingling when the anthem was sang and stuff. And like so vocal throughout and like dancing, dressed up, like just fun. And what was kind of cool was they were all intermingling before the game outside because there were like giant screens all around the stadium flowing out the bars and stuff, and everyone was watching the Australia game. So it was like proper like electric atmosphere, which meant actually at kickoff the stadium looked less than half full because everyone was still trying to get in after the penalties. But yeah, I mean, the game, it wasn't the prettiest still, but it was a significant improvement on Nigeria, I thought. Just everything clicked a little bit more. I think they had a little bit more time on the ball. Nigeria was so well organised in their press and just really sort of stuck to their game plan, man marking pretty much every player. That was really difficult. And Colombia didn't quite have that same presence and pressure on the ball and on the England players. So they were able to like control possession a little bit more. You know, there were still holes in it, but I thought particularly Lauren Hemp and Alessia Russo were absolutely fantastic, like really energetic, like really sort of driving play from the front, which we've not really seen in quite the same way. I still think there's problems in midfield, but yeah, defensively and attack-wise, I mean, just great that we got some goals from open play for a change. But yeah, just delighted that it was 90 minutes and I'm not still at the stadium.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I have to say the way Joe's game went up in Brisbane, I was thinking exactly the same thing, to be fair. But let's go through in chronological order, because you know me, I'm a little bit anal, I like to do that. Let's start with Lacey Santos's goal, Marva, 44 minutes. It came as a bit of a sucker punch to the Lionesses, it felt. Did she mean it?
No, but she'll claim it, and she should, because I think any of us would claim it if it was us. It was an incredible strike, because when I first saw it, I was like, oh, deflection, unlucky. And then I watched it back and I was like, that wasn't a deflection. It was sort of the way that she hit it. It kind of just swerved really early on and just sort of, I think, just wrong-footed Mary Earps and just confused her, really. But maybe some questioning over Earps's positioning and just sort of how early she jumped, I think. But it was also a kind of freak shot that, of course, no one was expecting. But yeah, I think she's been incredible all tournament, to be honest, Santos. And I thought Colombia just, I was scared in the first half. I was scared. I thought they really came at us, even in sort of moments where we had a bit of sustained possession. I thought them on the counter attack, and then also just their Ramirez at the front. She's just surprised me. Like, she has possibly been my player of the tournament. I think just what she does in that position, I haven't really seen any centre forwards in any other team do what she does. I think she honestly improves pretty much any club team that she could go into, and I bet there will be a lot of clubs after her. But yeah, unlucky for Colombia, but a beautiful first goal, and it was just obviously great for us, but I do feel for them because I think they've won the hearts of a lot of us.
Yeah, well, that equaliser came at exactly the right time, though, didn't it? There was, I think it was 7 minutes of added time in that first half, Susie, and Lauren Hemp stood up and scored the equaliser in the 6th minute of added time. But to be fair, it didn't look like it should have gone in. You know, you have to look at Catalina Perez there, how she spilled that shot initially. She's going to be so angry with herself.
Yeah, I mean, it's not great, is it? It was pretty poor, and it's so gutting for them to concede so deep into added time at the end of the half as well. Like, I think it was the 6th and final minute of added time, and a real sucker punch. You know, they worked so hard to get themselves into the lead, and, you know, really had the crowd behind them, and potentially going into a second half ahead. Yeah, you can't like underestimate the power of getting a goal at the end of the half to equalise in a game like that. I mean, it just sways momentum, doesn't it? And just swings the belief towards the team that have come back into it like so significantly. But yeah, really gutting moment for Perez, who's had a pretty good tournament. I think, you know, obviously we've said that goalkeepers generally have had really good games in this competition. Obviously we'll talk about one in the game after this one, but Mary being slightly positionally a little bit wrong for their goal, and then goalkeeper spilling it for Lauren Hemp's equaliser, didn't maybe show the best side. But at the same time, that like rest of the game, I thought Earps was absolutely outstanding, and Perez obviously went off, and you saw 20-year-old come on in her place and do a pretty decent job, considering, you know, making your World Cup debut at 20 in goal, coming on in place of your 28-year-old experienced keeper who has excelled through the tournament. So yeah, big game to mess up in, but those things happen.
And actually, Alessia Russo in England showed the resilience in the second half, didn't they? Because I felt Colombia were causing them some problems. And then Alessia Russo, 63 minutes, was absolutely fantastic with that goal, Marva.
Yeah, incredible finish. Maybe defender could have done a bit better, but I thought Alessia Russo's movement to kind of anticipate that the ball was going to drop there and then the finish there as well. I thought she had a great game, as we sort of said before as well. I thought her and him really sort of pushed it from the front, which we hadn't seen. They just worked really hard, and then the finish to finish it off, really. So it was, yeah, I was screaming very loudly when that went in, because it just kind of felt like we started to sustain a bit of pressure, but we still weren't really getting any kind of clear-cut chances. I think the only chances we were really getting are kind of from set pieces or corners or sort of crosses in, which Daly had a few. Russo had one, I think, as well, which kind of just ended up in the goalkeeper's hands. But to kind of get such a clear one-on-one chance and put it away like that was beautiful. And hopefully we see a few more through balls through, because I think that's where we are at our best, when we can pull those moments off. But we've just really been struggling this tournament to do so.
I thought you could really see the relief as well in her celebration. Like, just,
yeah,
it was just etched all over her face. I mean, obviously, you know, coming into the tournament, leading the line in place of Edlyn White, retired, you know, only having one goal so far in what was a pretty comprehensive and relatively easy win in the group stage. Like, she needed that moment. She needed that for confidence massively. And it also repays the faith in Serena in sticking with her when you've got the likes of Daly and Beth England, who are like scoring for fun at club level and breathing down her neck. I think that's a real pressure lifter.
Yeah, and actually Rachel Daly had a couple of good efforts in the first half herself, didn't she? So, you know, she was itching to get on the score sheet for sure. And actually, you mentioned, Marva, the corners and free kicks, and Bo message to say England's movement on corner kicks and free kicks reminds me of line dancing in US country music bars. Lots of choreography, but it's really hard to see the point.
Yeah, maybe a bit harsh. But yeah, I think it's just been a bit of a theme all throughout the tournament. It's like, especially in the sort of the first game with Daly, and you've got players who can get on the end of crosses, but then it's just sort of, it feels like not really a tactic. It's almost like a half tactic of just kind of putting crosses in, and they haven't really pulled through other than in that China game. So yeah, I think it's more a case of where we have done better is that we've switched it up a bit. So we're not just relying on those crosses. We're not just relying on those set pieces. We've slightly improved in sort of creating a few chances now as well. Whereas in that first Haiti game, it was literally just all we could do was just chuck in wayward crosses. So we'll see. Maybe the line dancing will pull off in the semi-final.
Oh, yeah, that'd be quite fun. Just finally on this one, Susie, I feel as if we have to give a lot of love to the defenders because they put their bodies on the line. And I thought Alex Greenwood in particular was fantastic in this match.
Yeah, I mean, before the quarterfinals, she had the most touches of any player in the tournament so far. Like, has just been immense. And when you consider that, you know, she didn't play much of the Euros last year, was sort of bumped out of the team by Leah Williamson almost on the eve of the tournament as they shifted her back from experimenting with her in the midfield. Weirdly, it's hard to see how Leah walks back into that defence. I mean, obviously, it's a long, long, long way off. But the way Alex is playing, but also the way she's playing alongside Brighton Carter in a back three is really, really solid and really complements each other. I mean, you know, I'd argue that Jess Carter is the best 1v1 defender on the team. Millie has been absolutely immense and really good at driving out from the middle as well, and Alex has just been phenomenal with her sort of vision from playing out from the back. So like, it's really well balanced. It's, you know, obviously right footed players and Alex Greenwood as the left footed centre back. Just like it just all complements each other really well, and it's hard to see them being able to go back to a back four because of how strong it is, and then because of the fullback options being Lucy Bronze and Rachel Daly as the best options of the bunch at the moment, are so attacking that you sort of have to do that. So it's hard to see them going back now, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to give a little bit of love to Georgia Stanway as well for that ball through to Russo as well for that goal, because it was an absolute beaut of a ball. I've not brought Joe in purely because I'm assuming, Joe, that you were jumping up and down, screaming like a banshee, slash getting some post-match reaction and writing articles after the Australia game, which we'll go in depth with shortly. But did you manage to catch any of the match? And if you did, what do you make of your semi-final opponents?
Yeah, unfortunately, I was still a bit busy when it was happening, but it was on one of the screens in the media centre in Brisbane, so we could see a little bit of it. I think the thing that stood out for me, and after listening to you guys talk about that game, is that I am a little bit scared now, the way that they were pushing forward. And I think when we found out that Lauren James was going to be suspended, maybe there was a little bit of, ooh, okay, but maybe a little bit of pressure off that point. I mean, she'd been so phenomenal in her previous games. But then after seeing the result today and how they handled Colombia, who have been so great throughout the tournament, yeah, maybe a little bit worried now.
You have actually reminded me that the last time we did the pod, we didn't know, did we, that Lauren James had been handed a two-match ban from FIFA, so upgraded from a one-match ban, Susie. I think many of us were maybe surprised by that and thought it was going to be a three-match ban. And we are very much looking ahead, because England have to beat Australia in order to get to the final. But if they did manage to do that, Lauren James would be available for the final. The question mark is, would Serena Wiegmann change things up and start her again?
I would 100% if that option came to it, because if you're looking at players that didn't play the best on the pitch, I think Ella Toon was the weak spot in that team. She really struggled. I don't think she's a number 10. She's more a box-to-box, and she's not quite got the physical presence to be able to go up against a team like Colombia in the middle like that. But then she hasn't necessarily got the same sort of technical skill of someone like Lauren James or Fran Kirby, who naturally slot into that number 10 role and are capable of unlocking even the most resilient of defences. So she was the weak spot for me. I think she's really struggled in every game she's played. So she's a logical player to target to a certain extent. So, yeah, I mean, if England managed to get through to the final, then the option of having Lauren James back is obviously huge, because she's just an incredible talent. But and it would be a really good story to write up as well. But, yeah, like, I was so shocked that it wasn't a three-match ban. I think it probably should have been. I don't know what or how the FA managed to wrangle her out of a more serious suspension, but it felt a little bit harsh, particularly, or a little bit unfair, particularly in the context of the Nigerian player that was given a free match ban for a dangerous challenge, but a challenge nonetheless, not a premeditated step on someone's back, which Lauren James is very much was. So yeah, it's a surprise, a good one, and you know, if they make the final, fingers crossed.
It's a big if, though, because before they kicked off this quarterfinal against Colombia, they already knew that if they got through, it was going to be Australia in the last four, the co-hosts. I mean, I can't even begin to round up this game. I'm going to let Joe do it. It finished Australia 0, France 0 after extra time. And Australia won it 7-6 on penalties. But it was 20 penalties later that we finally got to that result. Joe's already shaking her head. I mean, it was a truly extraordinary shootout. As if the USA-Sweden shootout wasn't exciting enough. This was crazy. It's the first time in Australia's history that they're through to the semi-finals of the World Cup, though. But I mean, it's not even half of it, is it? 20 penalties, etc. You were there, Joe. It was a nerve-shredding game to watch. I don't quite know how you're even here with us right now. Try and talk us through it if you possibly can.
Well, I'm hanging on by a thread, but as Susie said earlier, alive, barely alive, but still alive. Where do I even start? There was so much in that game. And once the penalty shootout started, it was almost instantly forgot everything else that had happened in the 120 minutes before, which was still an epic. I mean, the story at the end of that for me is Mackenzie Arnold, an incredible performance in goal, in regulation time, in extra time, and in the shootout, which won them the game. But then some other interesting things, I think some of our younger, newer players really shone today. Interestingly, one of our veterans, Alana Kennedy, at centre-back, I thought that she had a bit of a shaky game, but Next to her is Claire Hunt, who has, I think, maybe 9 caps now for the national team and is 24, 25. And she's stepped up this whole tournament. But I thought today she held her ground really well, particularly towards the end of extra time as things got really chaotic, just going from end to end, balls ricocheting through the box. And yeah, and I mean, Mary Fowler is probably the other one as well. I think she actually made a couple of errors earlier on in the game, which led to some scary chances for Eugenie Le Sommer. She had a good chance that came to naught in the end, but I think Mary Fowler's one to watch. When she gets the ball, she just sort of, it's almost like she dances a little bit with it and you kind of wonder what she's going to do, and then she just pulls off these incredible passes. She was foiled a few times in front of goal, but then put away a belter of a penalty to get one back at the end. So, I mean, what have I missed? There's so much that happened, so much drama on top of all of that.
It was such a dramatic quarterfinal. I have to say, I found it absolutely astounding, Joe, that Mackenzie Arnold stepped up not just to take a penalty, but to take the 5th penalty as well. I mean, it was just madness to me.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. We weren't sure what she was doing at first. We thought that she was waiting for a review or something, and then we realised, no, she's standing there because she's gonna take that herself. And I had the exact same thought afterwards. She went back and stood on the line. It's like, well, how are you gonna compose yourself now? And you know, she'd already made, I'm not sure if she'd made 2, maybe just 1 save by that point. How are you gonna pull that out again? And you're right, I think that there probably was a mental aspect there which may have, you know, affected those next couple of kicks, but I mean, she was able to pull it together after that, and it was enough in the end.
Yeah, I mean, it was the shootout itself. I feel like we're just ignoring 120 minutes worth of football, but it was all about ultimately the shootout, and ultimately didn't matter that Mackenzie Arnold didn't save those next 2 penalties or, you know, in fact, score hers. But it was mental to watch from a neutral's point of view, Marva.
Yeah, it was such drama. I thought we weren't going to get a better penalty shootout after the Sweden-USA game, but I think this delivered. I just loved, like, there were so many different narratives, like even just France bringing on their, you know, their second goalkeeper, which I love to see in tournaments because it sometimes works out, it sometimes doesn't. And then you had Perisse who came on to take one, and then that always never goes well. And then, yeah, Arnold to step up and then miss. And then, what was it, like 3 match points, essentially? That was incredible to watch. That you just thought, is anyone actually going to take this? Does anyone want to get through to the semi-final here? But yeah, I literally had my head in my hands multiple times. It's been so fun. And then just the added thing of like VAR and like coming off the line. There was also a retaken penalty that was then missed again. It's like, if you were to write all the different things that could happen in a penalty shootout, they happened. But I guess it was, for the game itself was, didn't live up to that same drama. But I thought after the first half, which was a bit slow, towards the end of the first half, I thought it started to get quite exciting. And then in the second half as well, it did start to really open up, and either team could have won it. I thought both teams had really good chances that France will regret more. But it was so exciting to see, and what a way to end it as well.
Well, actually, Alana Kennedy got away with one a little bit, didn't she? Because she scored a shocking, I mean, it would have been a cracking goal if it was for Australia, but it was an own goal. But, you know, there was a foul against Wendy Renard. That was in extra time. You know, thank goodness for that. And then, as you say, that goalkeeper change, Durand brought on by Herve Renard for the shootout. Massive call. Susie, you were obviously getting ready for the England game in Sydney. You kind of mentioned it at the top, but what was the atmosphere like? Because I think you could tell that quite a few people had stayed outside for the screens outside Stadium Australia to watch the shootout, so they were late to their seats.
Yeah, I sacked off actually preparing for the England game. I've watched England enough times, and went and watched it in the pub right by the stadium that was absolutely rammed, and we couldn't like get close enough to a screen, and we were like looking through a sea of heads towards this tiny little screen in distance that may as well have been in Brisbane itself. It was that far away from us, so I couldn't really see what was going on, but the atmosphere was absolutely buzzing and everywhere was rammed. There were a number of bars, every single one spilling onto the street. They'd put up screens outside, inside, every single screen switched onto it. There were big screens up in the sort of Olympic Park around the stadium. And yeah, it was just absolutely manic. And everyone together was watching it, you know, Colombians, England fans, Australians who have sort of come to watch the game as neutrals or just come to soak up the atmosphere a bit. And yeah, it meant everyone was late into the ground, except for me. I left at 90 minutes to go and actually do some preparation. It's weird because, you know, we saw the Lionesses be so, so embraced by the country last year when they won the Euros, but it just feels a different level here, like from the start as well. It just feels next level and has permeated for me like so much more deeply into society than it did during the Euros. It's a weird feeling like comparing it, and it's just a complete world away from France. But yeah, the atmosphere was mad, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, how much is the nation embracing World Cup fever, Joe? I mean, it's quite incredible. They're the first hosts to reach the semi-finals since the USA in 2003. Could be the first since the Americans in 99 as well to triumph on home soil.
Yeah, I think it's exceeded expectations even here. It's really interesting to hear that comparison with the Euros, actually. One thing that's happened in the last few days in Australia is that there's been kind of this rejigging or reshuffling of what is otherwise a very sort of established sporting landscape or broadcasting landscape, I suppose. You know, the news got pushed back on the channel that has the World Cup broadcast rights. And then they also play AFL games, Australian rules football. And they, you know, they moved one of their kickoff times further back to try and get regular time Matilda's game in. And then they also came to an agreement with FIFA to play the Matilda's game on the big screens in the stadium, the MCG in Melbourne, before one of the blockbuster footy games that was happening tonight. They didn't then show the extra time and the penalties because the other footy game had started, but they did continue to show it on the other TV screens throughout the stadium, which is just, it's just incomprehensible. Like, I still cannot understand how a men's Australian rules footy game had women's football on TVs at the same time. Like, it's just, it doesn't make sense to me. And it's just incredible. I mean, on one hand, I think, you know, the AFL has had to accept, okay, we need to embrace this moment because the rest of the country is and we need to get on board. But on the other hand, it's just the power of this moment and of this Australian team and this tournament.
And that is what I absolutely love about it more than anything else. You know, we talked in our preview pod about success making change, and that's exactly what the Matildas are managing to do, which is absolutely incredible. Just one quick word, Marva, on France. Will they be kicking themselves, or did the right team win?
I mean, I think, you know, if you win, then you're the right team in that sense when it's penalties especially. But yeah, I think they will be kicking themselves because especially in that first half, I think in the first kind of 30 minutes, 35 minutes, they were the team on top and they just didn't capitalise on their chances. They got very lucky with that Fowler. Well, it was great defending, to be fair, but that Fowler chance towards the end of the first half. And you thought maybe that would just kind of wake them up a bit, given that they were the better team in the majority of the first half, but they didn't. And if anything, I think Australia had better chances in the second half as well. So yeah, it's. I kind of expected more from them, to be honest. They had that chance from Lucara as well, who literally just somehow shinned it over the bar, and I couldn't believe that didn't go in. So in that sense, they will be kicking themselves, but at the end of the day, they didn't do enough. So I think the right result happened.
And we had already lost Italy manager Milena Bertolini's crisp suits, RIP, to Herve Renard's crisp white shirts. It's all down to you, Serena, and your bomber jacket from now on. That's it for part one. In part two, we'll round up yesterday's two quarterfinals.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome back to part two of the Guardian Women's Football Weekly. So to Friday's action, we'll start at Eden Park, where favourites Japan were knocked out of the World Cup courtesy of a 2-1 defeat by a very impressive Sweden. Arsenal's summer signing Amanda Ilestad scoring her fourth goal of the tournament in the 32nd minute before Manchester City midfielder Philippa Angeldal doubled their lead from the penalty spot early in the second half. I mean, it felt as if the Swedes were in cruise control, but Japan did make a game of it towards the end, all of a sudden coming to life at the end of that second half, awarded a controversial spot kick when Riko Weki hit the bar. Justice may be done, we'll discuss that in a second, before West Ham's Honoka Hayashi pulled a goal back in the 87th minute. We were all set for that grandstand finish, Susie, weren't we? But it was just a bit of a case of too little too late for the Japanese in the end.
Yeah, and I was quite sad about it because, you know, I've sort of really enjoyed watching them throughout the tournament, really thrilled. The football they're playing is so nice. But I always had this like thing in the back of my mind that when they come up against a team that is really defensively solid, good from set pieces, well-organised, quite physical, that they might come unstuck a bit. Obviously, they got the sort of thrilling win over Spain in the group stage, but against a European team that plays a very similar style of football to them, very possession-based, very technical and tactical. And I just was sort of waiting to see what they would do against, you know, sort of one of the big European sides that plays a little bit differently. And that was sort of their undoing, which is pretty sad. I thought Sweden were much, much improved on their performance against the US, like really maybe spurred on by the fact that they sort of scraped through that so narrowly, but look a really, really strong side and potential winners of this tournament, I would say, like, which is interesting because after the Olympic final, I thought that was sort of the peak for this Sweden team. I thought that was the height that they were going to reach, their best chance at a major tournament trophy or medal, as the case is in the Olympics. And I really think they messed that up. And I thought that was it for them. So to then see them do as well as they have in this tournament with, you know, quite a few changes to their team from that one at the Olympics is really impressive, and also great to see so many Gunners doing so well.
I was going to say that they're littered with WSL talent, aren't they? And it's back-to-back semi-finals now for Peter Gerhardsen's side. But they've always kind of been always the bridesmaid, never the bride a little bit, it feels, Sweden. But this felt like more of a statement performance, Marva. Even after sneaking past the USA, literally by a millimetre, this felt like they meant business.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've all kind of been saying we haven't been that impressed with them. Even that win over Italy was still just a bit like Italy being bad rather than them being that good. But no, this was a real step up. And I think that's where you make even more of a statement when you make a statement at this moment of the competition, because you saw it with Japan, you know, they'd won every single game. They looked incredible. But if you don't go and then, you know, pull out a great performance at this stage, it's all over. So it's really important to start growing into it around this time. And it's similar to what we've kind of been saying about England as well, in that haven't been the most impressive, but they've got it done. And I think when you get it done, that's what matters in tournament football. And Sweden are sort of giving me those vibes at the moment. So I think also quite a few of their players just really stepped it up. I thought Aslani was great. I thought Rolfo was great. Angdol was great. And they're looking now like they've kind of figured it out. Whereas I don't know if you can exactly say the same about England. A lot of the problems we were facing, we still haven't necessarily ironed all of those out. Whereas in that performance against Japan, I think Sweden kind of did that in a lot of ways. Maybe it was a bit choppy at the end, and obviously the crossbar saved them, and somehow Misovic's back didn't hit the ball and have that go in. I don't know how that happened, but
I'll tell you how it happened. She has a force field around her goal. That's how it happened.
had to have. But yeah, so maybe a little bit of luck at the end, but overall, a really comprehensive performance from them. And yeah, Spain versus Sweden will be a very, very interesting one. I feel like all four teams left could win it. That's just what's exciting. So we'll see.
It is exciting, isn't it? I mean, I was devastated to see Japan go out because they've been my favourite team to watch. But we kind of speculated that maybe set pieces could be their weakness, Joe, and it proved the case. Absolute chaos for Ilestad's goal. They couldn't clear their lines. They also just couldn't deal with Sweden's physicality. There was such a height difference, and it felt as if the game plan for Sweden was so perfected and Japan didn't really know how to beat it.
Yeah, I think the way that Sweden really showed up, made Japan look small in more ways than one. They were so much more physical, and it did look like it was a completely different Japan team playing from what we'd seen before. I was really hoping that it was Japan that was going to make that statement in the quarterfinals on top of what they had already done. You know, I feel like a lot of people had kind of been rooting for them, and just as everyone has said, really enjoying watching them play. And it was just unrecognizable. There was some excellent goalkeeping, I thought, still. I thought Yamashita did a really great job to keep it at 2-1. Obviously, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. And yeah, I'm disappointed that we're not going to see them go further, but also excited for what comes next time, because I think it's a pretty young team, and the way that they got everybody so excited this time around, they're going to have a lot more to offer.
Yeah, it feels like they're going to come strong at the Olympics, especially after having such a disappointing home Olympics, Susie.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like there was a lot of talk about how they were potentially sacrificing the 2019 World Cup to blood a load of youngsters and sort of getting them ready for the home Olympics. That didn't quite come off, but we're seeing it just a couple of years later sort of look like, as a team, they're really coming together. I think I said on the pod last time that they look like a club side. The movement, the mind-reading passes, like it just all seems very, very instinctive and natural in a way that a few other teams show. So yeah, like a few more years under their belt, and I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. The Olympics might even be a little bit too soon, but next World Cup, a lot of these players are going to be in their prime. It's a question of whether they can get the test against, you know, some of the top nations within that time that really puts them physically to the test, and whether some of those players potentially, you know, quite a lot of the team plays in Japan still move abroad to try and sort of get that experience against these kind of teams week in, week out.
Yeah, and actually, you know, we did see them against Spain. They were so impressive. You can't believe, really, that they beat Spain 4-0 in the groups. It's quite incredible. And Spain are into the semi-finals themselves, because last but not least, incredible late drama in Wellington. Teenager Salma Pareo coming off the bench to score a 111th minute winner as Spain reached the semi-finals for the first time in their history. It was a 2-1 extra time win over the Netherlands in the end. And it's fair to say, Stephanie van der Graat had a pretty eventful final game as a professional footballer. She gave away the penalty in the first place in the first half with a crazy handball, which Mariona Caldente slammed home via the post. Then she went from villain to hero, springing the offside trap to bring her side level as we ticked into injury time. But it was the 19-year-old who had the last laugh in extra time. It was an incredible finish, Susie. And actually, on the balance of play, Spain were just good value for their place in the final four.
Yeah, frustratingly. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I really want to see this Spain team get knocked out. I don't want it to be successful. Not for the players. I want the players to be successful. But, like, I just think when you've got a manager who, you know, quite clearly there's problems with, you know, players have refused to play for the national team that should be at this tournament that would make Spain win it. When you look at it, they are desperate for a really good centre-back. Mappy Leon is probably the best in the world, and she's not there. And it just makes me angry that they're being successful despite all of that going on. And it speaks to the talent of the players rather than the manager doing a good job. I thought it was really telling that the final whistle, like, they're all celebrating and he is completely ignored. So, yeah, I mean, great goal, but I'm just really irritated.
Are you as irritated, Marva? Because I'm just going to pose a question. Jorge Vilda said after the match, they played an extraordinary level, all of the players. It was a match with a lot of emotional decisions, and the goal from Salma was sheer joy. Look, we've not been shy to criticise Spain, have we? Susie Rack has just done so herself a second ago. Do we need to give Jorge Vilda and his coaching staff some credit for what they've managed to do at the tournament so far? Don't roll your eyes to the sky. Answer the question.
I would like not to. I think in my mind, this Spain team has just been a team without a manager, in my mind, as I've been watching it. But they did. I'll speak to the team as a whole, which may or not include the coaching staff. I'll play it that way. I thought they really stepped up in this game again as well. After, you know, that terrible Japan game, you just kind of thought that their heads would go down and they'd be out of this tournament. But I thought they were much the better team for most of the game. And they are exciting to watch in some ways, which I share the same annoyance as Susie of annoyingly, they are nice to watch. And, you know, Paraluelo hurt that finish and the kind of exciting young talent they've got on show. And that mix as well of kind of the legends like Hermoso and then the young talents coming up and just some of the best players in the world. And it is a shame that we're not seeing more of them, as in more of the best players in the world, because there are some more for Spain that could be playing. But you can't deny the talent that they have. But whether that will be enough to take them through all the way, I'm not too sure. But if they do, then I'll be happy for the players. Let's just say that.
Wilder took off Bonmatí. That was a big error and probably helped contribute to the equaliser. So, like, I think we can criticise him as a coach too. Bad decision.
Oh, God, I'd love him to come on this pod one day and just give us his thoughts. Maybe not. I don't think we'll invite him. Let's not invite him.
I feel like he might not come on if you did invite him.
I don't think so. I don't think we'll see. Let's just say, bearing in mind what our postal system is like, that the invitation, Jorge, is in the post. You'll never get it. Lyneth Bierenstein, not going to want to watch back the highlights, Joe, though, is she? Because even though the Netherlands were outplayed throughout, they had some real gilt-edged chances to steal it, and it felt as if they really missed Danielle van der Donk.
Yeah, they did, and she looked so sad in the stands. It was really heartbreaking. And I think, you know, they just looked increasingly desperate towards the end, long balls over the top to Bierenstein, and she's so fast and so skillful, but it wasn't enough. I did think at one point, I mean, it took a while for Spain to score, and I thought at one point maybe we were looking at another Sweden-Netherlands, or maybe Netherlands were just going to end up winning 1-0 from a penalty or something like that. But I mean, I think Spain deserved to win that one.
Yeah. As an aside, classic Johnny Lou. I mean, I talked at the beginning of the pod about culture. I said I wasn't going to bring it. The three of you also said unlikely to bring it today. Johnny Lou's not even here, but listen to this. His description of Van de Graaff's goal in his match report. And truly, this was a central defender's finish. A shot of all consonants and no vowels. A thud so agriculturally primal, it really belonged in a museum next to some cracked pots and a prehistoric medieval plough. That is peak Johnny Lou. So we're up for some absolutely mouthwatering semi-finals on Tuesday, 9 a.m. UK time kickoff, Spain against Sweden. On Wednesday at 11 a.m. when we finish talking to Joe Kahn until the end of the tournament, it is England against Australia. I'm going to make you all set your stalls out. How are these ones playing out? I'm going to start with Marva.
I think Sweden are going to go through, and I think, obviously, I've just got to back England, don't I? So England, Sweden in the final is my prediction.
Joe is looking to the sky now. I think we've all had an eye roll this pod, haven't we? Go on, Joe.
I think Sweden, they just look so dangerous now. And Australia. Sweden, Australia in the final, sorry.
Susie Rack?
Well, obviously, I want Sweden to win. I mean, that's a given, and I think they will. But Australia, England, oh man, I'm gonna say Australia, because I have to tactically vote my Joe may not know that my predictions are historically appalling on this podcast, so yeah, I'm trying to catch myself out.
This is what she did in the last one, and she did say Colombia to win, and it worked. So reverse psychology, fingers crossed. Right, listen, prepare yourselves for two cracking semi-finals next week. Marva, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Joe Kahn, go get yourself some sleep.
I will. Bed's just there. I'm nearly there.
World Cup fever, Susie Rack.
Yeah, I can't go to bed yet as well. I've got to write two articles first.
The amount of times I've sent you messages going, why are you still awake, by the way? Isn't it 4 a.m. there? I've kind of given up on you getting any sleep this tournament. I will see you soon, though. We'll be back on Wednesday to round up the semi-finals and look ahead to Sunday's final. Can you believe we're there already? Women's Football Weekly is produced by Ned Carter-Miles and Lucy Oliver. Music composition was by Laura Iredale, and our executive producer is Danielle Stevens. Women's Football Weekly is supported by Google Pixel. With its incredible camera and AI-powered technology, Google Pixel is bringing fans closer to the game this summer. Search Google Store to find out more.
This is The Guardian.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.